Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another Bald Move Television. We're the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Cecily.
And today we're going to be talking about a variety of things. Two things. We're going to be talking about wrapping up The Boys, Amazon's new kind of breakout hit about superheroes behaving badly. And then Cecily and I are going to wrap up season three of Harlots in that order. We saw the first four episodes. We talked about that last week. We've now seen the final four episodes. It's been a wild fucking ride for me with The Boys. I really enjoyed it. I am looking forward to next season. What do you think, Jim?
I was less enamored with the last half of this, although I think that Homelander alone makes this series worth watching because he's so fucking good. But I felt like it got a little soap opera-y. It got a little over the top toward the end. They introduced the baby stuff, and I'm like, oh boy. But yeah, I mostly enjoyed it. Also, I will confess to like mostly background watching the last half of the season. So
there's a lot of it.
I don't remember a ton of it.
There's a lot of intricate stuff, and I don't know how much that and would impact your enjoyment.
I feel like I did it a disservice by doing that, but
yeah, I feel like the story was mostly just about what is her name, Elizabeth Shue's character's name, and Homelander. I liked this season or the show a lot. I don't have really a negative take on that. My favorite movie growing up was The Usual Suspects. It's a movie that it was a twist that really just blew my mind, and I hadn't really seen that many adult films yet.
And yet you're married to Aaron.
Well, he changed my mind about it.
And
that was young, so my opinion kind of evolved. I was like, yeah, you know, that is kind of lazy storytelling. And it's like proactively lazy. Like, you're doing a lot of work to not have to do this other thing to hide who the killer is. I think this show ended up there because at the very beginning, as soon as we saw that his butcher's wife was still alive or hadn't died that anyone could tell, I knew she was going to be alive in the end, because why wouldn't she be? However, in the later seasons, they show a baby claw its way out of her and kill her. Like, they show this guy telling Homelander that happened, and they show it through his memories. And I just feel like that's the same kind of lying that The Usual Suspects did to get you to look another way, so that at the very end, when you see she is still alive, it's a big surprise.
Yeah.
The only thing is the final episode, and I agree with that analysis, but I need to go back. There's a couple scenes I need to rewatch, because the thing that might save it for me, because when you pointed it out, I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of true, is that Homelander is kind of investigating this himself, and the final scene of the show implies that he detected an inconsistency between their stories and knew that they were lying. And I wonder, like, I'm okay with it if they do the visuals and they're visualizing this guy's quote-unquote memories, if you could, as an audience member, synthesize those two stories and see those discrepancies yourself. Because then, if you're clever enough and you're in Homelander's POV, it'd be like if Kevin Spacey had some tells that there was lying, or
you see the bottom of the coffee cup?
Or if he was talking to Kevin Spacey and Benicio del Toro, and the investigator could detect the differences in the stories, because then it's like, you know, then you're in the role of an investigator too. You're in the role of, I guess, fucked up role of Homelander. But I don't know, because you're right. If they just showed, and I think they could have also done, like, made it clear that this was this guy's story or memory by maybe having a different color filter on that footage, or maybe make it look kind of do the hazy frame, like there's some kind of cinematic technique that says this isn't the actual unvarnished truth. This is unreliable narrator type thing. Because otherwise, yeah, it does seem like they just straight up lied to you, and then, ooh, what a twist.
Yeah, I guess so. If they had shot it, I mean, it's just that's how visual storytelling is supposed to work. It's shot like a memory in the right color and aspect ratio. You know, yeah. if it were like Memento and we're meant to question the memories, then it'll be at a camera angle tilt or sepia tone or black and white or something yeah. like that. And then you can really question whether or not it's real. It just felt like it. I don't know. I agree with you.
I guess having not seen The Usual Suspects, I'm translating all this as, yeah, just like a very daytime TV soap opera, like dramatic reveal for the sake of dramatic reveal, kind of, you know, disguising information, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I guess that is what Usual Suspects does. Yeah, and those are the things that annoy me about it. I think there are a lot of really good things about it, though. I was fascinated by the geopolitical stuff when it comes to these heroes, these soups. Like their sort of strong arming of the governments was fascinating to me. Homelander's relationship with Elizabeth Shue's character, fascinating.
Yeah.
Dark, weird, perverted, all of those things. Look, it was super interesting.
I want to drill
something
into that a little bit.
Something that's not been overused.
I want to
something I've seen a lot.
I want to drill in a little bit. Also, by the way, like I think we've already got into little spoilers, but we're going to spoil the shit out of all this stuff. So if you don't like, if you're not into The Boys or Harlots, we'll see you next time. So why do you think, when do you think Homelander found out about his child? Because I was very puzzled by his fixation with Elizabeth Shue and the jealousy he had of the baby and all that. And then I started thinking, if he knew that he had a son that was taken from him for some bullshit reason, and then she has this child that he was denied, I could see him being fixated on that. But I don't know if the timeline...
No, they don't play it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. Like, that would make a lot of sense for that character. But the timeline doesn't work out. But when he finds out, I think he's finding out for the first time.
Is Elizabeth Shue's character much older than Homelander? Because, like, was she, like, how did he, because he had this,
maybe
like, this
little,
psychosexual mother
uh-huh.
fixation with her.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to breastfeed him at one spot. Uh-huh. At that point.
So did I.
I said
it on our last podcast, and then they did kind of like a simulation
sort of
it.
Well, yeah. Why did they pull the punch on that? You know, because like I felt like this show was so transgressive otherwise.
Because I think they're trying to keep her on the line of trying to tame Homelander, unless like also being sexually into it.
Yeah.
She can't give him everything he wants either. She
right.
has to, yeah, keep him on that leash. And I feel like if she gives him everything that he desires or needs, she's going to lose
yeah,
him.
Right. Which is probably true.
So you tease him with it, right? You tell
right.
him like, this is what you want. I have the power to give it to you, but I won't give it to you unless you're the good boy that you should be.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wondered about Homelander is there's this concept of terrorist soups.
Yeah.
Who engineered the terrorist soup? Is it
Homelander? He says it.
But did he do it like on the behest of the company, or did he do that on his own?
Yeah, he's got his playbook that he's working for the same goal as the company,
right?
And as Elizabeth Shue, but he's got a different playbook. He's not going to read their lines.
Yeah.
He knows how to do this better than they do.
Is he trying to be like the literal god emperor of mankind? Because it seems like
like
he's pushing himself to a point of supremacy, and I'm not even sure who could stop him.
That's the point they're making, right? Like,
right.
Your governments are powerless against these soups.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
What are you going to do against Homelander?
Yeah, and he just melted out the brain of the only person who really could try to control him.
That was fucked up.
Well, and the
whole visualization of that process was fucked up.
It was. But before we go there, the scene where he's, you know, saying that, look, I created this terror. I gave them V, and they created this terrorist soup. He is like both making a request and also a threat when he says nothing happens without me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he's, you know, she's moving up to another floor. She's still going to be his day-to-day contact, but he makes that point like none of this happens without me, which I think is a threat and just, you know, sort of a request to be in on the process.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. What do you think? You think Elizabeth Shue's baby is dead?
Why would he save it?
He probably got blown up, right?
Yeah. I think Homelander could save both Butcher. Did I say Homelander wrong?
No, you just said it in the funny way that you say, like, Superman.
Homelander. I think he could save them both. I just don't know why he would save that baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unless he's got some more of a fucked up complex where now he wants to take this child as his own because he lost his child. But he didn't lose his child, right?
No,
his child's alive. Yeah,
and he looks like he's super too.
Right.
Yeah, and that baby has only ever been just competition for him.
Yeah, that baby's gone. That baby's done.
What'd you guys think of the Jesus camp type of plot?
I didn't think much of it.
Yeah, because I felt like that was... It felt to me, as a person who used to be a religious fundamentalist myself, it felt like someone who has no idea what any of that shit feels like and what a person... what kind of emotional arc a person would go through if they were a fairly good person that plunged themselves in this milieu and it's gotten darker. I don't know. It felt
like a true believer that was... pushed to the edge by
the rhetoric, like, oh god, why are we hating gay? Like, I just felt like, I don't know, maybe it's also, if this was set in like the 80s or 90s, I would buy that, but like, holy shit, it's been, you know, 15, 16, like, it seemed like that's what bothered her, the anti-abortion stuff, the homophobia, and that's been mainstream Christian America for a good long while, or I guess should say mainstream evangelical Christian life for some time. And I just like that, all that stuff felt hollow. I didn't mind the, like, the mother, the expectations, all that stuff, but like that, just in that particular bit of nuance felt almost cringy to me.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think about them all being given the serum thing and there aren't any natural soups?
I don't know. It's a weird way to almost see, like, the artificial intelligence singularity. Like, if you fuck with things that you don't quite understand and now you've made a god and you think you can control him because of what? Psychology? You know?
I think it opens a lot of dramatic doors, especially as it regards, like, the bigger ideas in this show, like society versus government versus the soups and this corporation. Like, this brings the people more into it, which is what I'm interested in as well.
Do you think Homelander's son has superpowers?
His eyes glowed red.
Did they?
I think so. When he, like,
that's his power. He can make his eyes glow. That's it.
Well, when it first started happening, I thought Homelander's going to, like, it was actually a prelude to him burning the kid's eyes out of his sock. I'm like, wow, he's going to go for a double eye burner.
Yeah.
This kid's going to be a pawn used against Homelander, right?
That's a good question. Because one of the questions I had was, like, how tough is Starlight? She's tough enough to take, like, three high-powered sniper rounds, but it did distress her. I don't think it does a shit to Homelander.
Right.
So, like, unless she can, like, her light powers are strong enough to, like, hurt him, I don't think she can do it. I don't think Queen Maeve can do it. Maybe they'll pit this kid against his father.
Well, I'm thinking even just, you know, using psychology on him, controlling this kid, who Homelander no doubt is going to have some attachment to. Just doing the same thing they've been doing to Homelander. Once the spell breaks for him, then they have the kid that they can, you know, probably more easily manipulate.
I feel like they can't do it now that he's discovered the secret. You think that maybe they were waiting until the kid was older to use him against him? Or also, I don't see why Butcher's wife would agree to that.
No, I'm more talking about, like, planting ideologies in this kid that are opposed to what Homelander stands for.
Or supremacist position.
Yeah. Just using him in that way, like a political pawn, a, you know, psychological string to attach to Homelander somehow, to still kind of keep him under the thumb, even after the spell with Elizabeth Shue, weird mommy pervert complex thing is done.
Yeah. Who knows what the future is for the Seven? however many of them are left.
God, yeah, like A-Train. Because that's the thing. Like when
done,
when he showed up, I'm like, oh, God, they actually might kill Starlight. Because it felt like a Game of Thrones. Like, they'll just kill anybody. Because he's super fast. She's super strong with those light pulses. But how are you going to hit something that fast? And him having a heart attack, I thought that was pretty good. But yeah, they've got what? The Deep got raped. Uh-huh. That's all the fucked up shit. The thing I couldn't look at was her jamming her fingers into his fish gills.
Huh.
Yeah, that was real. It was really bad. Really hard to watch. I hate that for him. I feel like he was just a complete piece of shit in the very beginning, and then they never did that with him again.
They went way too hard in the beginning with him.
Yeah. And now he's supposed to be a victim, and I'm conflicted about it in all of the wrong ways.
Yep.
But is that like, is he a product of the superhero culture? Because that's the thing. It's like, I get your point. He's established early on as a piece of shit. And the best they could do is like, oh, well, you know, he was hurt and abused too.
Well, they tried to make it all kind of a misunderstanding on his part too. Like, oh, you had a crush on me. What's the problem here?
Yeah.
And I never bought that at all. I saw him as a huge asshole. They went so hard on that in the beginning. And they're trying to play him for laughs and sympathy, and I was not into it.
Yeah, I think I mostly agree with you. That was the probably weakest part of the series for me.
Yeah.
When you said soap opera, what did you mean by that? Were you talking about the relationships between?
Because I'm trying to remember. It's
because there was like the thing with the claw. What's the claw lady? Clawbone.
Oh.
Spike claw.
Yeah. Pop claw
and A-Train, that was like very kind of weird and torrid, and her like crushing the dude's head. And then they had, were you talking about like Starlight and Huey?
No, I mostly like that stuff.
Okay, because I felt like that landed pretty well, and it's an intriguing idea. Like, what would a mortal look like dating one of these soups?
Yeah, I can't quite remember what I was on about with that, other than the baby appearance and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, kind of like in the twist of like, oh, you thought it was this, and
right, and oh, and she's actually alive.
You thought Marco was in a coma, but actually it was his evil brother, and here's Marco back. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, I get you. I'm excited to see season. I don't know how many seasons they've got in here. This felt like a really strong act one.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm real excited based on how it ended. Like having that super terrorist out there that they've created, that they've engineered. And now V seems to be kind of out in the open. The public, I don't think, knows about it yet, but they might soon.
How does Butcher walk away? Like, does Homelander just do it as a stunt, as like a flex? Like, I've destroyed you psychologically. You can't hurt me physically. Mm-hmm. You can't hurt me psychologically because I have no psychological weaknesses. Which is, I guess, a psychological weakness. The fact that you're a psychopath is probably what's going to bring you down. But I don't know.
But even if he and his wife were to get back together now that they know that where each other are.
There's no way that's going to happen.
Yeah, no. It's been almost 10 years, right? Butcher is a completely different person who's gone to some dark places.
Very. But the thing is the Homelander's weakness is of course, I don't know if the entire world turns against him, but like his weakness is his public perception is so far off of his reality. Mm-hmm. And Butcher's a threat to that because, if he's alive and he knows about this and he continues investigating to find some film footage, I feel like it's a little arrogant, which would be in his character, for Homelander to let this guy live. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I buy that he would just do it just as like, I'm gonna let you just so you can live in pain for the rest of your life.
I mean, he's clearly evil.
Yeah. And he feels he's invulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, has he ever been hurt?
Not that we've seen.
Yeah.
So I think that's fascinating. I'm curious to see how they go forward. And also, you've just got this character just so much more powerful. Like, what is his weakness? Are they going to ever establish that?
Mm-hmm.
We know he can't see through what was it, zinc?
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if he's got some kind of Krypton.
Get your pennies out. Start melting them down.
Yeah.
Create those zinc.
Do you think
Iron
he's
going to
have like some kind? Because he's almost stronger than Superman. Because Superman, you always had kryptonite. You could take him down with.
Yeah, what's this guy's kryptonite?
If he went rogue, yeah.
Elizabeth Shue's breasts.
I wonder if they'll, because like the other thing I'm interested in is what's the Batman analog, the Obsidian Knight or something?
Noir?
Yeah, Black Noir.
Black Noir, yeah, I think.
Because if they're going like with this kind of like dark version of Super Friends, one of the canonical things about Batman and Superman is Superman trusts Bruce with a vial of kryptonite in case he ever goes like rogue. He expects or is mind controlled by an alien and is going to destroy the Earth or whatever. Like it's Batman's job to take Superman down. Mm-hmm. I don't see Homelander doing that with Black Noir, no. But like maybe that's the thing, because like is Black Noir a bad guy? I mean, the only thing we saw him do bad is trying to hunt down the girl who seemed, from an outside perspective, as being pretty bad herself.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I wouldn't label him evil yet.
No. At worst, he's an anti-hero, like in the vein of like a maybe amoral, but for amoral in the pursuit of some kind of societal justice type of like a Punisher type.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, like, since we don't know anything about him, I think he's the most fascinating character, because what if he is like a super smart, like Batman type, and he is basically good, and if he finds out about the shit that Homelander's got up to, that he's horrified and he has figured out some kind of solution. Because,
mm-hmm.
Like, the thing is, the boys just don't have enough juice to go against Homelander.
Yeah. No, they don't.
Yeah.
They're going to get V, though.
Yeah.
Pretty soon, Huey's going to be superpowered.
You think so? You think that's where
they're
going?
Carl Urban's eyes are going to glow.
Because that's the other solution, is you got V. If anyone can be super, then, get the boys going and see where that goes.
It's a huge risk, though, because you could end up with superpowers that are just kind of useless, like the deep.
Well, plus, it seems like it's very... also, like, that this goes bad a lot of times, too, maybe. Mm-hmm. That, like, you give... Sometimes this stuff goes wrong.
And you can get addicted to it and overdose on it and all those kinds of things, yeah.
I did love Butcher using... Was that from the previous segment where Butcher was using the baby as the
laser
the laser gun. Yeah. That was pretty sweet.
That was good.
There's a lot of those great moments, and mm-hmm. just the violence of like Homelander landing in that terrorist cell and just eye lasering everyone, just casually walking around, just bisecting, head exploding.
These people just explode too.
Yeah. Man, they never do eye lasers right. I've never seen a show do eye lasers correctly. Because they always kind of drifted across the room.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's eyes work like that.
No.
If I look from you to Cecily, it takes about a tenth of a second, and that beam should just jump to you.
You couldn't sweep.
Yeah,
you wouldn't sweep. It would
almost be more terrifying.
I can sweep my eyes, but
it's still a little jumpy.
I can watch your eyes are actually jumping like a 10-degree increment.
Right,
so
right.
Your brain spins
But what
out.
Should happen is it goes from you and it just... jumps to someone else.
It should
and
look
jumps
like a terrifying point defense laser system.
Yes.
That would actually be...
It'd be so much more terrifying.
Yeah, because it's just like...
There's no dodging that.
Yeah.
Like, if I can look at you, I can kill you. That's,
yeah,
right.
And I do.
Uh-huh.
that's...
That's a good point.
It's a very good point. I would like to see that. That would actually
be
more horrifying.
Yeah.
Maybe Brightburn gets it right. Anything else we want to talk about? Homelander?
No.
No, not Homelander, the boys. I feel like it should be Homelander. It's clearly his show.
Clearly.
Right.
He's the Anthony Starr is so fucking good. He's got that way, you know, because he's an anti-hero in Banshee, but he's a good guy. But he's got that same way of like smiling without it touching his eyes at all.
Mm.
It's like the way a shark would smile.
Yeah.
And he's just clearly very charismatic, but just full-blown fucking crazy evil. He's amazing. I'm so glad he found this to land, no pun intended, after Banshee.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Cecily and I are going to now kick Jim out of the studio, and we're going to throw down for like 30 minutes or so on the present and future of Hulu's Harlots.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah, well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
All right, Cecily, it's time to talk about final season. Oh, wait. The latest season of Harlots. Season 3 that just wrapped up this week. It's we're a couple days delayed because we had an equipment malfunction at the home studio. Let's talk about our thoughts first on the episode, then on the season as a whole, and then we can talk about the future of Harlots.
Okay.
What did you think of this? We came into this episode thinking that they'd have to do a lot of heavy lifting to kind of like put things on the right track. Do you feel like that they accomplished that goal? Did they come close to accomplishing? Like, what did they have any good fan service? What's your read?
Well, I think so. I like it. I liked it. It's action packed. There's always all kinds of things going on. And as far as them getting it back on track, I certainly think so.
Do you disagree? Well, I mean, I liked where it ended up roughly. It's just that I felt like this episode was kind of indicative of the later half of this season, where it felt like everything was rushed. Nothing made sense. We're just going to move these characters around and have them go through these crazy arcs and, you know, okay, which might be fine because, again, I don't know how much control they had over the chaos that apparently was this season. I'm looking forward to seeing, like, you know, if there's any postmortems or something to see, like, if the Jessica Brown, Finley Brown thing was, like, really super unplanned or,
She's
actually alive for next season.
Dug herself out of her grave. I mean, what kinds of stories do you think they could continue to tell?
Well, that's the thing, because the Wells girls, who were the core of this plot, are largely no more. Like, I don't know what kind of a plausible excuse they can get to keep bringing Margaret back overseas. And it's just going to, like, even if they do, it's going to be increasingly ridiculous seeing her kind of traipse around London, you know, like a two-time wanted criminal. And Lucy, I never thought her arc was ready for her to, like, Charlotte was ready to assume command, you know? Lucy is just really fucking not. Lucy's the type of woman, I mean, I guess she does have that Margaret impetuousness where she'll just show up uninvited to a croquet match or a cricket match.
Yeah.
Boast that she can beat any man there, get tagged out at first, and then like, oh, fuck, I got no plan. I guess I'm going to debtor's prison. I don't know. There's just a lot of crazy shit. Like, Blaine apparently is just a governor. Like, his one task to get, it's like a MMO quest. His one task to become a governor was just find a prince, a suitable whore, a tractable whore.
Right. That's all you need to get ahead. And there's only one. They're very rare.
Yeah.
In a city that's like 80% of their workforce is prostitution.
Good thing. Good thing. One of, well, I mean, that's the thing. Only 1% of the women in London are employed, but 90% of them are harlots.
The GDP is gross domestic pussy.
And not gross and disgusting, but that's how they measured pussy by the ton.
Yeah.
Like, would you like a gross of pussy, sir? A gross of domestic, or would you like just some foreign? We have some French pussy. So yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of really good feel good moments, you know?
Yeah. Cherry and Fanny.
Yeah,
Cherry and Fanny. I love it.
So I guess that's the question we'll ask at the end. Like, would we be interested in essentially a Harlots with the B cast? You know, so like think that over. Let's talk about the stuff that I don't know. You just want to talk about the episode and
yeah, that's
period.
What were we doing?
I mean, one of the problems is that they told and not showed a lot of the relationships, and I think most of this was indicative with Emily Lacey and Hal's relationship. That she's always been a character who's kind of like sat on the fence, which that's a hard arc. It's like, God, who was the awful governess that always conspired with Thomas and Downton Abbey?
Oh.
You know how she was, they were always kind of like running their schemes and stuff. But like after two or three seasons, that got tired and they had to pick a side and kind of redeem themselves and move on to other houses. And I feel like Emily Lacey, they just kept like, oh, she's just so fun because she flits back and forth across the battle lines. But like the final 30 minutes of this episode where like after Hal had locked her in. Which was like, you know, that was like a deeply scarring thing to happen to her at Quigley's house mm-hmm. in the first season.
Right.
They're actually having this kind of Romeo and Juliet thing from the window, and she's conflicted and torn. And
yeah, I don't understand that. Emily Lacey.
And who the fuck is Hal again?
Right, exactly. She always seemed like someone who sat on the fence because that was the smartest place to be in the first few seasons, I think.
Yeah.
Because she always does what's smartest for her.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem smart for her at all.
Yeah.
I would like to see... The B-cast I would watch would be Margaret Wells and Emily Lacey tilling the land in America and getting up to whatever American hijinks they want to get up to.
Yeah.
That'd be fun, but not this. This isn't the Emily Lacey we know.
I just thought... It's like, every character that she talked to, interacted with, every main character was like, hey, you know, you can't keep fucking us like this, or you burnt us once, but, you know, twice shy, but they always continue to help her and give her safe passage and all that stuff. But the big problem is we came in this season with her and Hal in this kind of relationship already fully formed. Hal is the B plot in his own B plot.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, Isaac was the pincher that we gave a shit about, and he lasted, like, one episode longer than Charlotte did.
Right, the Wells girl we actually cared about.
Yeah, so they got this crazy guy who I thought was the principled one between, but then it turns out he's the real lunatic, so Isaac was the... Like, who was the brains and the steady hand at this ship? It seems like neither of these gentlemen were, so how the hell did they get to... I don't know. This whole season I've not been, like, super enthused about the Hal and Emily and been very invested in it, but then the whole like there's it felt like that scene where he was out in the street and Nancy's like, you're a fucking idiot, and she looked back at the Hal and he's like, but I love you, we were going to get married, and she looked back and like Fanny's like, you're a fucking idiot, and you know Hal's down there like, please baby, please, I got the papers for the tavern, and she looks back and the ghost of fucking Charlotte's like, you're a fucking idiot, and like oh my God, cut. I'm done. You know, we're done with the scene.
Right. It does seem like a waste. They have a really prime spot. The mm-hmm. Pincher's Bar.
Mm-hmm.
Bar and whorehousery.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great position. I would like to see the Cherry and Fanny empire expand. Huh? Nancy get back in the game. Oh, Nancy is the Bloodborne barkeep.
Nancy does need to get back into, she's an NPC in a new Bloodborne quest.
I love Nancy. She continues to be my favorite.
I've hunted the beast that are men for decades now. It's your turn. Take my hat and my butch stick.
The doll standing outside. It was perfect.
Yeah, oh yeah. Shit, yeah. So pimp that doll out. No one knows what we're talking about because I feel like the audience of Harlots is completely distinctly set from the audience. You're the one exception that's a fan of both.
You're the one exception.
Oh, that's true.
Both of us.
That's true. I think I just uncovered some casual sexism in myself. Time to get back to rooting and stamping. So another plot line that I thought was almost laughably rushed is like this whole season's been a quest to reunite with Sophia, right?
Yes.
This one episode. So the thing, the impetus of this was Lady Fit stealing the baby last episode. And
yes.
I still think it's hilarious how the footmen were like, "Oh, right this way, my lady. Take the Lord's baby." And the nanny just hands it over and smiles as she's stealing the baby.
Right.
It's just that fucking easy. And then this powerful guy has been able to, like, he had the power to commit his sister to Bedlam last year. You know what? He doesn't have the power to get into a house that he owns. Because his sister's men have been instructed to bar the door. And they can't even do that because he barges into the house. But
right.
In this episode, they find Sophia. She has been completely brainwashed against Lady Fitz. And then she finds out in like 15 minutes later that like, "Oh, you tried to have me sold. I'm completely against this now." Just this 180 degree pulled the emergency brake, hairpin turn on this plot. And it's all resolved nice and neat in a bow.
Yep. Yeah, that happened. I guess I would have liked to have seen something better for Lady Fitz.
Mm-hmm.
She has this very triumphant moment at the end of last season, and then they just take everything away from her.
Mm-hmm.
For really no great reason, we've come to find out.
But no, then she gets it all back. She's like the Job of this show because she gets it all back. Plus, she's now got a house full of harlots and bastards, and she's
broken
running this,
thing.
Which great. I mean, the world needed a hell of a lot more of it. The world could use more of that charity right now. But it's weird that her arc this season was just her coming into a room, doing a 360, and then continuing into the room. This whole 8-episode arc didn't really. She lost Charlotte, but there was like maybe one line of dialogue that talked about that. She maybe started a relationship with Nancy, but then mm-hmm. she kind of backed away from it. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
I did like William North, you know, rescuing all of the kidnapped slaves or kidnapped former slaves.
Yes, that was really nice.
But it's again, it felt like it was less cleverness and investigation than random people telling them facts. And then him showing up at the right place and stopped it. It was like, I did think it was like a... Despite this being kind of artificial, when Harriet and like, Jack Lively. Well, one of them was like a fancy something or Lightning Jack. Was it Lightning Jack Lively? And the other guy was Fancy John Ladd.
Okay.
It was a moment because they're like, you know, when like they're hearing these people at the door and they're like getting up. And I think they were going to go out in the blaze of glory. And then the door burst open. It's fucking William North standing there.
Yes.
I mean, how can you not get caught up?
So exciting.
Why
did Hal need to be a part of this plot?
Just so you know, he's not just a misogynist. He's not just a potential accidental murderer. He's a fucking race traitor, too.
I was going to say the slave trader was the problem.
Well, I mean, no,
slave
I'm saying
seller.
A traitor,
yeah,
a
I
race
know.
Traitor, and slave trader.
The
yes,
slavery was the
and
was
he,
the bigger problem, I think.
I mean, they're just paint. They just go from he was the noble brother to he is the lowest of the low. And uh-huh. I don't know. This again, it felt like they were writing one episode ahead of what they were shooting.
If you're gonna make it that convenient, why not just do it throughout all of the episodes? Mm. It just happens now.
Mm-hmm.
But we still want Hal and Emily together in the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're supposed to believe that. Another thing that I did not like is, did you know that you can stab a Marcus who has just recently been appointed by the fucking king for his gross domestic pussy, and now he's a governor? You can just, two harlots can just stab him, and as long as the rookie justice is cool with it, everything is okay. There will be no investigation. There will be no harumphing in Parliament. There will be no one swinging from gal. It's like, it's just that easy. At any time, Quigley could have just stabbed the dude.
So easy.
It would have been so easy. Any of those times that she had those girls murdered in cold blood, she could have just waited until he came in the room, stabbed him to death, and it would have been over.
Well, no. once they broke out of Bedlam, they never could quite get that locked back down. So that's why there's no threats or consequences here.
Gotcha.
After they broke out, it was like, ugh, we're not touching
it's
that
one of those
one.
Things like when you're sentenced to hanging by, like, in the old days and, like, the rope broke. They're like, well, fuck, God don't want you hung. If you are in Bedlam and then you get out, it's like, well, you know, you're smart enough to get out of Bedlam, so craziness cured.
You earned it.
Yeah, yeah. And also, wasn't Lady Quigley losing her mind? Or, like, they had this whole plot where she was doing warlock shit?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, witch shit.
Witch shit.
Didn't want to misgender her sorceress ways.
Sexism from you.
I know. Root and stamp. I got to get back to it. I've gotten lazy. The price of, I don't know, male feminism is eternal vigilance against your sexist shithole ways. That was a thing, right?
That certainly was a thing.
She was conjuring black magic and losing her mind, hearing voices, seeing Charles, like, visions of him.
Yes.
And that's all. She just redeemed herself. She killed the head Spartan. None of the other Spartans are going to come back looking for revenge.
Never.
I mean, that might be season four, to be fair. And then you've got the other crowd-pleasing moment, which, again, I liked, is, like, Fredo, he was in love with, not Knox, Croft. And then he got a little bit carried away and got a little bit too public, and got Croft in some blackmailing hot water. And they had a falling out. And then the number two Molly boy turns out has been in love with Fredo the entire season.
Oh,
and Fredo is, like, only too happy to just, like, be totally in love with him in, like, a 30-second scene, and then they get arrested. And it's just, the whole thing is just so Justice Knox can come in and be like, I am not ready to hang two gay boys when there's a guy like Marcus Plain out in the streets, which, fair enough.
Right.
But it's like, it's so weird to see this much plot, like, unveil in such a fast time. Like, the raid happened, they fall in love, they get raided, they get thrown in jail, they get released in the span of, like, 15 minutes.
Yes. And the magistrate, he's just, who is he besides just, like, a key for everyone else in the story, all of these characters?
Oh, what do you need? He's a social justice crusader. He's a lover of harlots. He's,
do you need Kate to have some sort of conflict between whether or not she wants to be with this king? I'll throw him in there. Does he need to save this person? Throw him in there.
Mm-hmm.
Does he need to go get Vanessa from Penny Dreadful?
Yeah.
He'll be there.
Yeah. and then at the end, Hal gets pressed into the Navy, so he doesn't really get, I guess he's going to do hard time in the Navy, which I think is what, was he a soldier or sailor before? I don't know, and I don't know exactly how this is supposed to work, because was he charged with a crime? Did Emily accuse him of a crime, and he was charged with it, convicted of it, and then he's doing impressment for, like, he's being pressed in the Navy as a punishment, as a diversion of punishment. Is she just saying, like, in lieu of me turning you into the cops, into the justices, I enrolled you into the Navy? In which case, I think he could get out of it. Like, you know, if he's, like, a volunteer, he could just, like, get to the boat and be like, no, I changed my mind. I don't know. I don't. So he's still out there in the Harlots universe.
Just, he's going to be a pirate now.
Ooh, Pirate Hal Pincher.
Yeah.
The Dread Pirate Pincher.
There's lots of people to knock off the side of the boat. He'll be really happy there.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I was kind of surprised to hear you say that you like this episode. I do like the kind of final shape of this show. We didn't talk about Elizabeth Harley.
Harvey.
She's got, but that's not even her name, because, like, doesn't she? She comes out as her original name, her actual true name, to William North at the end of this episode, which I didn't understand the significance of that either. But, so you got, in the final state of board, you got Quigley and Lucy running Golden Square.
Yeah. Talk about Anne Pettifer.
Anne Pettifer. Oh.
She got fucked up.
Yeah. So she sold her baby and then got her face slashed. Which, also, why did she get her face slashed?
Because,
like, what was the story point? Like, I feel like everyone that saw her face get slashed knew that Marcus of Blaine was a fucking asshole.
Right.
So it didn't do anything to convince Sophia, because Sophia was convinced entirely by her lover saying, oh, yeah, he told me to sell you. So I don't know why she got slashed other than fuck Ann Pettifer.
Right. She just wants to be with her baby. What, because she told on Charlotte once? She deserves all of this? I don't even remember what it is that I'm supposed to be feeling about.
Plus, I just don't buy that Lady Quigley would be able to talk her into selling her baby.
No.
Like, she was a committed mother and desperately loved that child, and that was her story, and she had a way to, like, so Quigley comes up, so you'll never get away from Lord Blaine. He's super weak to steak knives, and I'm going to kill him in 15 minutes with no expectation of consequences, but you'll never be able to escape him, child. And she's just like, okay, 5 minutes later, here's my baby. 5 seconds later, my face is slashed.
So, okay, imagine if it had been played out a different way.
Uh-huh.
If her face has gotten slashed first, and then she sold her baby and as a desperate thing because she figured without her looks she couldn't make money anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That, I guess I'd kind of believe that a little bit.
Yeah.
More.
Or that's like, or maybe that was like a warning. Like, not only have I ruined your career, but I'll give you £1,000, which is a lifetime's of earnings for a, But again, if they literally, the script was ripped out of their hands by the director because he was 3 days late shooting. that's what we got.
All right.
So we got those two over there. We've got Elizabeth Harvey and William North running Margaret's old house, right?
Is it Margaret's old house?
No. There, what are they doing?
Because that's,
you're
Harriet's,
right. Fanny and Cherry.
It's Harriet's house, right?
But Harriet. Oh yeah. I guess that's right. So they're running a little, but why, isn't that a demotion for Harriet? Or is Harriet retiring with Jack and her children?
I thought that's what she would do.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Because they got married, so she's retired. She flipped the keys of that place to William North and Elizabeth. Okay, that checks out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Fanny and Cherry running the old Wells joint.
Yes. And potentially Nancy is there?
And Nancy is somewhere in that triad. Is this interesting enough bones to build a season four on?
No.
Because the other thing I've heard is that Emily, I saw an interview with the actress that plays Emily Lacey, and I guess she's got another full-time gig at a job. She's already cut her hair. She's dyed it like a dark brown color.
Oh, wow.
Or she's not dyed her hair, blah, whatever. So it's like, I think you can count Emily Lacey out, too.
Oh, bummer. No. See, I got really excited when they almost burned down the Wells house early on in the season.
Because
I was like, oh, well, this is something new. They're going to switch it up and give us a different location. Or this means for sure they all got to go to America.
Yeah.
But they undid that. It's fine from the fire. And everyone's still in the same place. I think Cherry and Fanny are really cute together.
Sure.
But just in their part scenes. They don't have a whole show in them.
Yeah. I think that this...
A-plot.
When I was watching this episode, I'm like... oh shit. Like 10 minutes in, it's like, this is moving so fast and things are resolving so quickly that they are just going to wrap up the series. And then when I was like 30 minutes into it, I'm like, oh, actually what they're doing is they're trying to desperately reset this show to like essentially the state of that at the end of season one. Try to Quigley's going to be the arch villain and the remaining Wells faction are going to be allied against her and she's going to be the new Dark Queen and the Spartans are going to be like this Pinchers were just kind of like a one season distraction and it's going to be the Quigley Spartan alliance. And then we got the last 5 minutes of the episode and I'm like, no, they're wrapping this show up. Like, if Hulu renews them, I'm sure they will come up with a season four, but the wrap-up scene felt like a series wrap. It reminded me a lot of, like, the last season of Penny Dreadful, where the first four episodes felt like a typical Penny Dreadful season, and there's some really good stuff there. But then it's like, shit, our show's canceled. Let's go ahead and do the Dracula endgame. Because I felt like undoing the Spartans was, like, the big boss of this series. and they cleared the mini boss and destroyed the head of the Spartans all in the same like 15-minute stretch of an episode. I don't know what else there is to do. There are no clear antagonists left.
Yeah. All the prisoners in Bedlam are freed. There's Lucy and Lydia being together is
drinking maybe poison claret. I love that the fact that like you know, she poisoned her or drugged her, roofied her, and then in the episode they're sharing a glass of wine, and like I thought they would give Lucy like maybe a skew look, like, oh, what about this glass? But no, she starts gulping it.
Yeah.
But they're allies in even more of a way than like Charlotte and her were in season two.
Right, because they're more equals, where Lydia and Charlotte was like a mother-daughter type of thing.
They both share the same life-ending secret.
Right.
So there's no like one-up on blackmail or anything like that. And it did feel like that kind of Lydia Quigley, I don't know why I keep saying lady, Lydia Quigley redeemed herself in the blood of the Marquis.
Yeah.
The Marchrist. washed away all her sins. Hallelujah.
You know, it does.
Praise Blaine.
I'm surprised they didn't do this sooner, because it does seem like Lucy is kind of what you'd imagine a younger Lydia to be like.
Hmm.
I think she's Lydia, or Lucy is more like Lydia than Charlotte and Margaret were.
Yeah. Or like she's also kind of the Nancy type, where she kind of might hate men.
Right.
You know, like, I fuck this, fuck sex, fuck intimacy. This is purely mercantile. Where like Charlotte and Margaret obviously did love men, despite all the shit that they've been through. They demonstrate this by shacking up with men who are just busy rooting and stamping all the time. Almost to an anachronistic degree for 18th century. Rooting and stamping.
Almost.
Rooting and stamping. what else? So what's your... That's my feeling. I think that we are going to hear in a couple of weeks. I guess we're just not going to renew Harlots. I am curious to see what this creative team does next, because I think I don't really blame anyone for what happened this season. I think they were dealt, like, this isn't a Walking Dead situation where they were dealt like a winning hand and they just kept on fucking losing. I felt like they were dealt a really bad hand, and I'm kind of sort of impressed with their ability to put a plausible roadmap for season four together. And, you know, maybe with a wing and a prayer, Hulu will renew them. But I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, it seems like this is a fine ending if this is all we get.
Mm-hmm. This is the best ending you can get from Charlotte dying unexpectedly in the middle of the season.
Right.
Because she's fucking off to go to another show. So yeah, but you're with me. You don't think there'll be a season four?
I don't think so. I mean, you'd have to bring on someone like a shot in the arm, like Liv Tyler was.
Another Liv Tyler,
right? Another new, or you know, or what's his name, Alfie Allen?
What they get?
But just don't like kill him immediately.
What was the Quigley's kind of mom figure? Choked on a fishbone, lady choked on a fishbone.
Yeah.
You get Dame Judi Dench to play her previously unmentioned older sister, who doesn't buy this fishbone nonsense, is going to contest the will. And
bring Nancy's mom or sister or aunt
all
or
of
someone.
Them. All of them.
Someone she never talks about because she's got such a hard relationship with, and that person comes in to shake things up.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a show
I want
I'm watching.
A Fox Force 5 of elderly former harlots that are now in high position. Then they're done with this Lady Fitz being their shield, and they're done with this Quigley, you know, trying to redeem herself, and they're gonna harumph, and they're gonna murder and slay.
Nailed it.
Then we get the Lady Spartans. What would be the Amazonians?
Ooh.
The secret society of Amazonians that is entirely populated by elderly former harlots who swindled their way into being kept women, murdered their masters.
Sirens would be more I like that name better.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, plus it alliterates with Spartans, right. The Spartans and Sirens.
Yeah.
So they're not having it.
That's in the same region and time period.
That's season four.
They will sing you in and draw you to your death.
We're not a part of the Screenwriters Guild, but we will work for scale.
You can have all these ideas for free. I have proof that I gave them to you, but I mean, just, yeah, think about it.
Hulu. The other think season four is mashup with Penny Dreadful.
Yes.
And
when is that coming
Frankenstein back? Resurrects Charlotte Wells after her new television series flops. And then we just go back. It's like that. There's the one season spooky crossover of Penny Dreadful. And then we just go back to business as usual. Season five. It's all better now is the tagline.
Or they could do a crossover with Nancy going into The Witcher.
Oh, huh? Yeah. Mix the blood-starved beast with the Witcher.
All of these free ideas. So, you can have them.
And also the track is laid with Lady Quigley doing her witch stuff.
Yes. Hello. Why has no one thought of this yet?
She's the witchest.
The witchest.
You got witch, witcher, witchest. Harlot season five, witchest. You heard it here, folks.
We're here.
Okay. Well, do you have anything else?
If it comes back, we'll be talking about it.
We sure will. I mean, we got Bald Move TV. What else are we going to do with it?
That's it. That's all we got.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like we bummed out another season. One of these days, we're going to use our powers for good. Maybe.
We killed another season of television.
Maybe we can do an American Horror Story. It's coming back mid-September.
Oh, yeah.
Already been renewed for two seasons, but I believe in the power of us.
Yes.
I believe in the power of us.
It can always be undone.
We got, and honestly, guys, we've got so much stuff coming down the pike between now and December. We're going to have full coverage of The Watchmen. We're going to be talking about his Dark Materials series. We've got The Mandalorian coming out. The Deuce is coming back. American Horror Story. There's going to be more Bald Move that you can shake a stick at. Cecily's going to be joining us, not just for American Horror Story, but some other shows here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, obviously, she's going to be a fixture on Bald Move TV. But that's it for us for right now. If you got feedback, you can send it in to tv@baldmove.com. Please join us with your fellow fans on forums.baldmove.com. There's a Harlots thread right there. You can get in and the venture spleen about the harlotry going on. And follow us on all social media you care to follow us at Bald Move everywhere. Everywhere.com/Bald Move. And until the next debacle, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
See ya.